This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we discuss the relentless pursuit of ROI. Yes, that's right, return on investment and return on inflation. We have a changing future with monetary policy and fiscal policy the way it is, and we need to prepare for it as investors by structuring our transactions differently, and we will talk about that on this episode and future episodes, of course. So we will be back with a fantastic interview for you and a guest today in just less than 60 seconds. Stay tuned.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn how to finance your next big real estate deal, there's a show for that. If you want to learn more about food storage and the best way to keep those onions from smelling up everything else, there's a show for that. If you honestly want to know more about business ethics, there's a show for that. And if you just want to get away from it all and need to know something about world travel, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
It's my pleasure to welcome Jeff Johnson to the show. He's president of Black Commercial and author of Cash Flow Forever, The Real Secrets of Real Estate Investing. He's the former president of the Washington Commercial Association of Realtors as well, and it's good to have him coming to us today from beautiful Spokane, Washington. Jeff, welcome. How are you?
Jason, thank you. Glad to be on your show today.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Tell us about your background in terms of investing, developing office properties, self-storage, and apartments, I guess, right?
Correct. Jason, I was fortunate when I got in the real estate business at the age of 20 to have a great mentor. My mentor did very well investing in single-family homes and small apartment buildings, and so I started down that road as well. And then as I developed my career as a commercial real estate broker, I focused on office buildings and had the opportunity to develop an office building early in my career. So from that starting point, my investments moved from single family and small apartment projects to office buildings, some retail buildings, some office warehouse buildings. And then we've gone with the opportunity in the economy right now, and we're back to developing apartments on a larger scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. And so what deal sizes are you talking about in terms of office and apartments and so forth?
Many of the office buildings that we've built over the years have been for a group of doctors or dentists, or let's say a group of attorneys, and they've been from 5,000 to 24,000 square feet. And the apartment projects we've done, the one we just completed was 48 units, and we did another 48-unit project a number of years ago that's performed very well.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. What are some of the real secrets of real estate investing?
Good question. When I got started in this business, I was fortunate to meet a number of very successful investors who were a little under the radar. And Spokane's a conservative community, and I soon learned that many of these investors had maybe only accumulated a small number of properties, but they had worked diligently to get their mortgages paid off. So one of my friends, Jim, who I met early on, had six rental homes he'd paid for, and they were bringing him in $4,500 a month. Another one of my mentors, Dick, at age 52, had just two commercial buildings that he'd paid for, and they were bringing in about $13,500 a month. So I developed and adapted this strategy early on of finding a good property, taking good care of it, keeping it leased, and rather than spending the cash flow or reinvesting it, using it to pay off my mortgages.
So you really think paying off a mortgage is a good idea? I mean, you know, that debt is so friendly when it's fixed and it's long-term and the rates are so low. I mean, basically like you borrow today, you're probably actually getting paid to borrow that money because the real rate of inflation is arguably higher than the interest rate. And that doesn't even include the fact that you're not even paying your own debt. You're outsourcing it to your tenants.
Jason, today, I would have to agree it's a little different ballgame when you can borrow money at 4.5%. I don't think we're ever going to see interest rates as cheap again. And it's a little tough to try and pay those mortgages off.
Yeah.
But in the years, you know, obviously interest rates are going to go up and down over the years. And as they average out, this buy and hold philosophy in the long term produces some great cash flow. So there's lots of different ways to approach real estate investing when you're in a smaller community like Spokane, more conservative community, and you don't have the big ups in appreciation. Mm-hmm. The buying and paying off the mortgages puts a person in a real secure situation as you approach retirement.
Right, right. When I look at your book here, you've got quite a comprehensive table of contents, you know, anywhere from picking a broker to, you know, where to get started, you know, accumulation, duplication, single family. Gosh, you just got a lot of stuff here. What do you most like to cover?
Well, my goal in writing this book was to share with people what I've learned over the years and try and take real estate investing and put it into some real practical, easy to understand principles, but also some real important principles. And one of those principles would be duplication. Early in my career, I had the opportunity to, in the early 80s, rent a building to the first Subway sandwich franchisee in Spokane. And he told me how he was going to run this business 7 days a week and make $30,000 a year. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of brain damage for $30,000 a year.
That's for sure.
But then about 10 years later, when he had accumulated 10 stores, and now he's making $300,000 a year, I could see where his motivation was. And I think that same principle applies to real estate. A lot of people get into real estate. It's not an easy business. It takes a lot of hard work and dedication. And some people quit after a few buildings. But if you continue to learn and duplicate the principles you learn in real estate investing, and down the road, all of a sudden, instead of three rental houses, you've got, as one man in Spokane here has, one investor in Spokane has 44 rental houses and they're all paid for, now we're talking serious money. Or one customer of mine who owns 365 properties, they're all paid for, now we're talking some serious money. The other principle that kind of falls in line with that is the principle of accumulation. And every once in a while, you've got to sell something to eat or move up as far as your real estate investments. But you don't build net worth by selling assets. You build net worth by accumulating assets. So another key principle, I believe, is asset accumulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Just keep accumulating those assets and, you know, try to keep them and don't sell them too much. You know, I've definitely noticed that the people who are into flipping over the years, you know, they have spending money, but the people who are the buy and hold investors, they tend to have the real wealth. If nothing else, it's a forced savings program.
Right. Absolutely.
At its worst. Okay. But it's a lot better than that, of course, as we all know. Now, interestingly, though, you keep talking about paying off mortgages, which I think is kind of like the old school thing. I mean, my mom did it. You know,
sure.
I love the refi till you die plan, as I call it, where you harvest the wealth of your property by refinancing over time. You take advantage of something I call inflation-induced debt destruction, mm-hmm. because inflation really pays those loans off for you. And then, of course, you in real estate, we don't have any debt. Or we outsource our debt to our tenants. So,
sure.
You know, as long as we're not investing in high-flying, crazy places like the Socialist Republic of California, you know, our deals make sense and properties will cover their debt. And I know you have a chapter about debt coverage ratios. I'd love to ask you about that. But you also, and the reason I brought this up, have a chapter about the magic of leverage. You know, is there a time and a place? Are you contradicting or what do you think? Or, you know, I just thought I'd ask you.
Well, one of the chapters that I have talks about financial capacity. You know, leverage is a great thing, but it needs to be carefully considered and there needs to be balance.
And I agree with you. It's like any technology, if you will, you know, nuclear weapons. Some would argue that those are terrible. They could destroy the planet many times over. Of course, that we all know that's true, unfortunately. But in some ways, you know, it can also be argued that they've prevented a lot of wars that might have started because of the deterrent effect, right?
Sure. Well, Spokane is a city that's got an average of 1% a year growth. So again, not big upside in inflation. So we need to be a little more cautious when those cyclical downturns come around.
Well, you mean appreciation. That's
right,
different.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So obviously, if you look at my chart in the book, you can see that paying cash for a property versus an average amount or a high amount of leverage is going to produce a greater return. And that's the reason that we all borrow money for the most part to buy real estate. So I think on the front end side, a prudent amount of leverage in real estate investing is good. It improves the return and it's beneficial. But I think knowing that there are always down cycles in the market, as you work to pay mortgages off, it creates equity and creates some margin for the tough times that occasionally hit our industry.
What about debt coverage ratios? Talk to us about that a little bit. Do you have a certain metric that you're comfortable with there?
Well, I think that's a little bit lender driven. You know, I think today, if you go to the bank, they're going to want a debt coverage ratio of about 1.25. I guess my experience over the years tells me this. I make my money when I buy. So I want to make a good buy. I've got a friend, Jim, who's a very successful real estate investor. And his real simple trick to success, Jason, is that he just wants to buy a building for 20% less than its market value. And he'll continue to shop until he finds a building that kind of fits that criteria. I also tend to be a value buyer, because when you buy for less than something might be worth in somebody else's eyes, you're creating net worth and creating value. So I guess I'm a little more focused on the value than the cash flow. And, you know, when times have been good, we've been able to finance buildings with 15-year mortgages, probably not a lot of cash flow, probably not a lot of debt coverage ratio, but we're paying that debt off and we're building that equity up. And as you know, that equity buildup is an important part of a return as well.
Yeah, no question about it. Good. What are some of the important math aspects that you mentioned in the book?
One of the most misunderstood or not understood concepts, math concepts, that's really important is, of course, cap rates.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have attorneys and bankers who say to me, gosh, I just don't get the cap rate. So I try and make a very clear and easy to understand explanation of a cap rate and the fact that a cap rate obviously is a benchmark of a determining value that's used by appraisers, bankers, and real estate investors. Our net operating income is fixed. And so as we analyze a piece of property based on its age and condition, location, tenants, we're going to say, gosh, here's the return I need to get. Or we look at the market and see what kind of return the market is paying for that kind of property. Benchmark for that, as you're probably aware, has always been Walgreens stores.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go online and see that Walgreens stores are selling at a 6 cap or a 5.5 cap or a 6.5 cap. And that's a benchmark in the market. But it's really important to be able to analyze a property, apply an appropriate cap rate based on the risk. More risk, higher cap rate, lower risk, lower cap rate. And then quickly determine what should I pay for that property to make it a good value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk to you about cap rate for a minute before leave that topic, if we could. You know, cap rate to me, and I know all of the guys in the commercial real estate world love to quote cap rates. And, you know, I think it's kind of a faulty metric in some ways because it doesn't include all of the multidimensional aspects of an investment. You know, certainly it doesn't include appreciation and commercial properties on the whole. I don't know, you know, there's a lot of different ways to chop this one up and
sure,
a lot of different opinions about it, but I'm going to say mine. I don't think they appreciate as well as good old single family homes just because they have to be sold on the income they produce. And the income is usually indexed to the CPI. And, you know, in a single family market, you can have these crazy nutty times where even in a linear market, you'll do 12% appreciation in a nice conservative linear market in the middle of Texas, you know, and then in crazy nutty places like California, New York City, Miami, you know, even Chicagoland, you'll see it do much better than that. But also it doesn't include the leverage aspect, and the financing on commercial properties is generally, well, almost always not as good as it is on residential properties. But of course, the downfall of the residential side is you can't scale as well. If you want to build a big empire,
sure,
you know, it's hard to do more than 50, 60 homes and scale that up. You know, then it gets kind of too hard to scale. Even Warren mm-hmm. Buffett said it himself, and we all know his famous quote. He said, you know, if I could, I would go out and buy a couple hundred thousand, or maybe said a couple million, I don't know, single family homes. if I could figure out a way to manage them all.
You know? Correct.
And we've, of course, seen institutional investors get into that market. And I predicted years before they did get into that market that they wouldn't like it very well, and they wouldn't do very well, and they wouldn't stay in that market. And, you know, that prediction seems to be coming kind of true anecdotally. That's the downfall. But for the small investor, you know, who wants to have a mini empire and wants to do 30 to 50 homes and a couple apartment buildings in there, you know, you can manage that. You know,
sure.
That scales to that effect, to that size.
Jason, one topic I do discuss in the book is the fact that to be an effective investor, a person should specialize in a niche.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty hard to be an expert in apartment buildings, retail buildings, and industrial buildings. So obviously, single-family homes are a great place for an investor to start, get their feet wet, and actually even excel if that's their cup of tea to, you know, go out and paint houses or have their kids mow the lawn. Great place to start and great place to stay if you're a hands-on investor. As you improve your investing skills and you want to multiply your time, as you move to larger multifamily properties or commercial buildings, then the other added leverage quotient is hiring professional management. So I got to a point where I couldn't manage my properties all by myself and wanted to buy properties where I could hire the professional management and then manage the property managers.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And managing property managers is another business.
Sure, for sure.
But yeah, certainly they're available to help you, and you just got to keep tabs on them too. So good. You wanted to mention another metric after cap rate, and I interrupted you with some questions there.
Well, I would agree with you that cap rate isn't the only metric. And actually, my other metric on the math is this. One key to being a successful investor, Jason, as you know, is to be able to understand what are the real numbers. What are the real rents? Are these market rents? Are they above market rents? Are they below market rents? What are the real expenses? What are the real capital items? And what is my net operating income going to be from this property going forward? I think that's probably one of the key fundamentals in getting started in real estate investing, because a lot of people buy properties but don't have a complete and thorough handle on the numbers. And then all of a sudden they buy a property and find out it's not performing as they expected.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a chapter where you talk about the reality of nothing down.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the, we'll call it the late night cable TV gurus, the late night cable TV guru industrial complex. How's that sound?
Fabulous.
Just like the military industrial complex and the pharmaceutical and the medical industrial complex and the Wall Street industrial complex. We'll give the cable TV gurus pitching on infomercials their own. I think they've really damaged a lot of investors by setting up a lot of false expectations that, you know, I guess the reason they're not all in jail is because what they talk about can be done.
It's
correct. Possible to do it.
Yes.
You know, but if you're going to find this needle in a haystack seller, and by the way, the whole rest of the world's looking for that guy too.
Sure.
You know, it's really difficult to do that. And, you know, they'll spend years chasing their tail. They'll spend tons of money on all their courses when they could just be buying properties instead. They really shoot themselves in the foot, don't they?
I agree.
And I have no idea what you even say in that chapter, so that's my opinion.
I think my point is to say that the kind of get-rich program, as you know, is borrow all the money, hope the tenants pay their rents and you can pay off the mortgages. But when you don't have a lot of equity and the music stops, you can find yourself in a world of hurt. And I've seen a couple investors here in our market. They were a retired Battelle engineer from Hanford down in the Tri-Cities. And they had never bought any real estate, but got a chunk of money, decided to buy a building for $1 million, put $400,000 down, single tenant building. And then for some unfortunate reason, the tenant moved out. And all of a sudden, instead of having $4,000 a month of retirement income, the investor had a $6,000 a month retirement payment to make. So it's just a matter of having your eyes wide open, being educated, and understanding how the game works.
Yeah, it really is. Comment on the false expectation paradigm.
Correct. Well, I think the goal for real estate investors is to have a realistic expectation that I believe investing in real estate is a paradigm shift for most people. It's not like you call your stockbroker, buy the stock and watch it. As you know, it's an active investment. You need to go out there. You need to search. You need to hire a good broker. You need to look at a lot of properties. Once you've got one tied up, then you need to go through the due diligence process and get as many of the skeletons out of the closet as possible. Sometimes at that point, you have to say, we're going to pass. Sometimes you go back to the seller and say, gosh, there were some things here we didn't expect, and we need to renegotiate. Need to make a good business decision, not an emotional decision. If all everything lines up, then you go ahead, and hopefully the property performs as expected.
Mm-hmm. Let's kind of close with just a quick discussion on property types. Now, you've got experience in, you had a mobile home park, you had a self-storage deal. I guess those were just one-off deals, one of each, right?
Right.
You've done apartments and offices and single-family homes, right?
And actually, Jason, I've actually bought a lot of land over the years.
Uh-huh.
I've actually bought that land both on a speculative basis and to do projects. Some of my, actually, my greatest returns have come in buying land and changing the zoning or subdividing it. And most of that land has been related to the development projects, which have been in office buildings or small industrial buildings. But land has been really good to me as well.
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned, and I'm glad you qualified that statement and said you bought it on a speculative basis, because, See, I'm not a fan of land, and the reason is because as I've gotten older and more conservative, I just don't like speculating. I just like buying and getting cash flow and being done with it, you know. But, you know, certainly, you know, it's like anything. If you're in the path of progress and change the zoning and maybe add value. What zoning change did you do, by the way, on your best land deals?
The best land deal was one where we bought a piece of freeway frontage land and changed it from a residential zone to an industrial zone.
Well, that must have been pretty easy, right? I mean, that sounds like a pretty easy type of zoning change. Why didn't the existing owner recognize that and do it himself?
Well, this property had been inherited by two ladies, two sisters who were not speaking. One of them lived in Ohio, one of them lived in Seattle. They couldn't afford to pay the taxes, wanted to get rid of the property. We happened to be in the right place at the right time. And this was a number of years ago when zoning was a little easier to get, and you could go down to the county, fill out the paperwork, put up the sign, go to the hearing, and usually nobody showed up to object.
Yeah.
Things are a little different today.
Yeah. So you're saying it's a lot harder today.
It is today.
Yeah. Now, why is it harder today? Just because the cities have become more shrewd and prudent, and they're going to make you form a special assessment district, build a park and a school before you get your zoning change?
Well, today there's people seem to be a little more active in what's going on in their backyard. So you have neighborhood interest groups. My partner, Dave, worked for 10 years to get a piece of property permitted to build a Target store.
Yeah.
And the neighbors fought him for 10 years. I don't know how many lawsuits he went through, but he finally prevailed because of the county comprehensive zoning plan. And the Target store opened this summer, but it took him 10 years to get that deal done.
And you realize, dear listeners, you realize that could just wipe you out waiting that time. It reminds me of the Wall Street saying, and, you know, everybody knows I'm not a fan of Wall Street. I call it the modern version of organized crime. But there is a great Wall Street saying where the investor is complaining about how their plan should work, and it's just the market is being irrational. I can't remember who it was that said, the market can remain irrational a lot longer than you can remain solvent. So,
good saying.
Yeah, that's a good saying. So the same applies to zoning, yeah. Would you do a land deal today then?
Jason, I still have a few pieces of land I bought in the early 80s when I thought I was going to buy them cheap, sell them for a lot of money and get rich, and they're still there, though they are paid for. Today, I'm really only buying land if it serves a development purpose or I know that it's at a key corner, that if I own the dirt, eventually McDonald's, Burger King, or Taco Bell is going to want to be there, and in some short period of time. Because to make a land investment work, obviously think about the fact that you've got that land, you need to get a return on it. So as time passes, the amount of return you need to get from the deal or the development goes up. So if your opportunity cost is 10% every year, all of a sudden, if you sit on that land for 5 years, you need to get 50% more out of it just to get your money back, so to speak.
Yeah, that's the problem with land. It just doesn't produce cash flow, you know. I like good old cash flow.
Right.
So yeah, good stuff. So product types, your thoughts?
I think an investor can make money in any product type. There are some product types that have a higher barrier to entry. Mini storage is one of them. Mini storage is a very sought after investment, and so the cap rates tend to be very low, the prices tend to be very high. Retail developments and properties tend to be pretty expensive because they're on higher arterial streets where land's usually in high demand. So obviously single family homes are a great way to get in. You can work your way up to small apartment buildings. Small industrial buildings in our market are still available for $100,000 to $500,000. That's a great way in our market to get started in real estate investing. And I know that some people are in communities where they're not quite as fortunate to have those low-priced properties available. But in our market today, single-family homes, small multifamily, and small industrial buildings under $500,000 are all great ways to get started in real estate investing.
Yeah. On my end, I just like housing because housing cannot be outsourced and the population's increasing and people can go shop online and that's going to hurt your retail center. Companies can tell all their employees to go work out of their house. That's your office space.
Sure.
You know, they can outsource the jobs to China, India, Philippines, whatever. Industrial goes to China, the workshop of the world. Boy, it's just housing, man. It's like the proven thing. At the end of the day, everybody's got to have a roof over their head, right?
Absolutely. And of course, the other real estate investment adage is to go with the trends and be ahead of the trends. And right now, as you know, the demand in housing is for rentals because there are many young people who are waiting longer to get married. They want to be mobile and flexible. And so the demand for rental housing and quality rental housing has increased. And I think that trend will continue. And I think quality rental housing is going to be a great place to invest your money in the years to come.
Yeah. You know, as we've got Generation Y, the largest demographic cohort in American history, even bigger than the baby boomers by a small margin, they are saddled with huge student loan debt, anemic employment, and they're just going to wait a lot longer before they marry. So, you know, that's going to be good news for landlords who can offer rental property for them because they're going to rent a lot longer and they want to be mobile so they can go where the jobs are.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So as a result of that, in Spokane right now, our multifamily apartment vacancy rate is in the 3 to 4% range. And I anticipate that it's probably going to stay there for a number of years.
Good stuff. Jeff, give out your website if you would and tell people where they can find you.
Again, my name is Jeff Johnson. I work for a company called NAI Black and our website is www.naiblack.com.
Good stuff. Jeff Johnson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Jason, thanks for having me.
Here's your chance to catch up on all of those Creating Wealth shows that you've missed. There's a 3-book set with shows 1 through 60, all digital download. You save $94 by buying this 3-book set. Go ahead and get these advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.